All right. Well, so with that in mind, I'm kind of curious because we were just talking about traveling. You probably won't be able to talk too much about this project because I haven't seen anything out there about it. But were you just on a set for something called Don't Die?
I was. Yeah. And you're right. Unfortunately, I can't really talk too much about it. But it was a really wonderful shoot in Tennessee. I've never filmed in Tennessee before. And what made it extra special was that it's the first time I've been on a feature film set since end of 2019. And it's only like the second film I've done since the pandemic started. So it was a really important, you know, kind of shot in the arm to like get back into the rhythm of it all. You know, I'd missed, you know, just being on a set and the camaraderie of everybody. And, you know, I had made a short here in LA, that I directed and a friend wrote that we made over the spring this year. So that was kind of like a return to it, but there's nothing like being like on a set, an indie feature set with like a lot of people still trying to be COVID safe, but trying to get back in the swing of things. But it was an awesome, awesome time. And it's a fun script. It's honestly one of the best scripts I've read at a really long time. It's like a tight 82 pages, and all the characters are really, really well defined, and I got a really great part. I was just thankful to be a part of it. Thanks to Virginia Newcomb. She's the one who got me involved. I saw some posts she made on Twitter about it and saw they were casting, and so I reached out and I was like hungry to be in a movie again, and I was like, hey, is there anything I could read for? She's like, absolutely. And that just kind of got the ball rolling.
So cool. So I've got to ask, you know, with the move to LA, I know timing was a little bit crazy because of the pandemic, but you kind of mentioned to me earlier when we were chatting, you love it out there. Like, you're really embracing the California living lifestyle. What is it about being out there? I mean, other than opportunity, obviously, but like, is it just the weather, man?
That's a really great question. I mean, first and foremost, I'm happy to be out here because this is where my partner, my girlfriend, is at. And we've been long distance for a while, so it was great to finally be under the same roof, and not only are we romantic partners, but we are creative partners as well. Like, we do films separately from one another, of course. Like, she does her stuff and I do my stuff, but we also collaborate a lot. And you know, there's a lot of ideas that we're co-writing and things that we want to make together. And so that's been amazing, you know, from being long distance a while to finally being under the same roof where you can spitball ideas all the time. You know, it kind of becomes like a workshop at breakfast. You know, it's no longer just coffee and eggs. You know, it becomes a a morning for ideas and batting some ideas around, things have been in the back of our head. So that's the main thing about being out here, is that I got to come out here and be with her. But secondly, like, in terms of just Los Angeles, it's funny because if you'd asked me 10 years ago or a little more, like, if I'd ever see myself out here, I probably would have told you you're crazy, because I'd had goals for years to go to New York. I was always coming out to New York to do indie films and work with a lot of really great indie film people there. And I didn't end up going out there. I ended up staying in Texas, and I was happy about being in Texas, and then was in Austin for a while. And that was great. But I think, you know, people say there's industry here, and to be totally honest, I really don't think it's about the industry, because at least in terms of indie stuff, I don't think this is a hub for indie people. You know, I think I still would say that New York or Texas even might have kind of a greater sense of urgency for an indie film community than here. Obviously, they make a lot of TV shows and commercials and things like that. But it really is. I think it has something to do with the energy here and the history here of Los Angeles. You know, it's the weather is really good. You're right. And not only that, but, you know, you can go 15 minutes north and I can be in the mountains, and go 15 minutes, you know, east, be at the beach, be at the water, and then you can go to the desert if you want. You know, you can go out to the desert. So I feel like you have a lot of different environments, and none of them are too far away, which is really, really great. It is. There's something about being on the West Coast that I don't think I'd ever really fully experienced. I used to always love going up to Seattle and, you know, Portland, kind of the Pacific Northwest. But being out here and really spending time and getting to know this space has been really wonderful.
Oh, it's beautiful. You know, you bring up something really important for the indie film scene, that it's not based out of like one particular place. It very much sprouts from mainly wherever, you know, the creative director or writer is from. Can you talk a bit about some of the unique places? I mean, obviously I'm going to throw out Cameron's work, you know, with like Some Beasts, sure, and that, you know, where you guys were there. And I think, did you shoot in Oregon on Ken?
Yeah, we did. We were in Oregon for Ken as well. Yeah.
What, and you just mentioned obviously Nashville with this new project. But as far as like being able to kind of jump around to unique cities and towns and places, I mean, I know Cameron throws you out in the middle of the woods, but like, what is it?
Yeah.
What's it like being in that world, in that realm, where the possibilities are so much more open in the indie scope, mainly because there is no money to spend on building something? You've got to find it.
That's true. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of people write whole scripts, indie scripts, based around what they have, right, or what they know. Like, without giving too much away, like, you know, the team of Don't Die, Ben Stark and Jeremy Burgess, like, when they were writing the script together, like, I know, like, a lot of what was written in was based on resources. And, you know, I feel like that's so common for a lot of indie people. For when they make something, it's like, okay, well, what do I have? I have an old car from the late 1970s. You know, I have an old warehouse. That's my uncle's friend's house or warehouse they work in. You start like making a list of all things you can, and you can write a story out of that if you need. And I know that there was a lot of that involved with Don't Die. And then sometimes it even is taken to a more personal level. Case in point, Cameron's film, like you brought up, where, you know, he himself worked on that farm in Virginia, in Cheek County. And so it made all the sense in the world to use it, not only because he already had connections there and he still was friends with the people there, but also it was kind of an investigation of what his time there had been like. And so it made sense to go to the source, go back to that exact farm. You know, you don't have to go to another place, you know, it's already there. So I think there's a lot of, you know, you can shoot in, I think when a lot of people think about, honestly, a myriad of locations like you're talking about, like, I think most people actually don't think of indies, they think of studio movies, right? Because they have the money, like in a new Bond film, to like have the main character jump from like continent to continent, like in a single movie. So I think, you know, when you're on the indie level, it's like, okay, what's the one cool thing you have that can add production value, but it's not there just to be cool, but that actually kind of helps tell the story and is saying something aesthetically and, you know, saying something even on a metaphorical level, you know, about choosing the space that you're shooting in, you know. I don't know if that answers your question, but...
No, it definitely does. Especially, you know, like you said, it's got to be important to the story. It can't be something, or, you know, just there for one shot. It's got to mean something to the project, the film. You know, when we first met, gosh, you know, I thought it was Hold, but it was The Other Side of Paradise, Justin's film.
Oh, man, Gotti, that's a long time, man. That's a long time. Wow, that's crazy. That's a long time, man. I kept thinking it was Hold, too.
Yeah, it was the first ever interview was Pearl Snap before I ever met Dev and started with C-League was The Other Side of Paradise. And I was like,
wow,
God, that's 09. You're not yeah. too far removed from school at that point.
No, I wasn't. I mean, I graduated from UTA in 06. Yeah, so that was Other Side of Paradise was a big turning point for me, and I was always grateful to Justin and Ariane for that role and for that movie, because I feel like it really kind of gave me a chance to kind of flex my chops a bit and do a full-on character work for something and like try to build a character who was very different than me, which was a real privilege to be able to play like that.
It was a lot of fun just going through your IMDb and realizing all of the connective tissues, you know, of people, not mm-hmm. just who are in Dallas, but in so many people. I mean, I remember when you were doing press for Upstream, you connected yeah. me with Casey. And I was like,
that's right.
You know, talking to Casey, I realized, like, God, Primer was one of the first films I ever saw about an indie film. And then, I want to say a month ago, I talked to David Sullivan. It was like, it's weird all how right. they all come full circle. And I'm kind of curious, do you ever reflect on the fact of just how many people and you have connected through just by doing your work, whether it's acting or obviously you're directing? I mean, there's so many hundreds and hundreds, thousands even, of people yeah. who have opened up because of a small bit role here or a bit role there.
I absolutely, man. And I do have moments where I kind of think about that, or, you know, you're aware of it all the time, but then you have a moment where you kind of soak it in. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that, you know, I would say all movies do this, and they do. It's all about who you know. But I think specifically indie film is, you know, it's a community of people who go to festivals and make films, and there's a lot of overlap. And I think, I know that I couldn't get some of the roles that I've gotten or some of the opportunities that I've gotten, you know, if it hadn't been for, you know, acting in a film where the gaffer on the film and I become friends while we're shooting, and he's like, hey, I got a script that I want to direct sometime. Like, do you want to like work together on something? And then you're on that shoot and you become friends with an actor, and the two of you decide to make a film together. It always just kind of leapfrogs from project to project in the indie world. At least that's how it's worked for me. But I think a lot of it has to do with like keeping yourself open to meeting new people and kind of, you know, allowing yourself that time to network. And network's kind of a crazy word, I think, because honestly, the older I've gotten, just even I could say like since I met you, I think my threshold, my capacity for networking and like doing a lot of like hangouts with like festivals and like meeting a lot of people, I think that's a wonderful thing. But I don't think that I have the stamina that I did to kind of do that. So it makes you grateful for like the friendships that you made, the collaborators you met, you know, when you were younger, like in my early 20s, that I've since now carried with me, you know, because a lot of them become some best friends, and, you know, they haven't gone away, and we still make films. We still collaborate. You know, Cameron and I still collaborate, you know, even though sometimes we're halfway around the world from each other, but we still make movies together. We still help each other out. Can always give notes on a cut or, you know, give feedback on a script. For me personally, it is intrinsic, and especially as an actor, even more so than as a director. As an actor, I think it's intrinsic for networking, because unless you have a manager or agent who's really willing to fight for you and push for you and help you out and try to find you some really good work, you're kind of on your own, and you got to figure that out, you know, find the work. And even when having an agent or manager, like, you still, I would say right now, if I look at all the work I've done up to this moment, you know, 95% of it, it has just been me meeting other people and me finding the work on my own. Even bringing up Don't Die earlier, it was just me cold emailing Virginia, you know, who I barely knew from meeting at Sidewalk Film Fest, and being like, hey, do you want to see me read for any of these? And that's how it opened up. So sometimes when I talk to actors, especially actors who are just getting into film, I mean, that's one of the things I tell them. I'm like, if you're trying to get indie work, like, my personal two cents is that, you know, don't be afraid to reach out blindly for work or for other people, because, you know, they're not coming to you. So you got to make yourself known and make yourself seen, so that they can't turn you away, you know. And if it doesn't work this time, they'll keep you in mind maybe for something in the future. And, you know, and last thing I'll say to that is an example with me and Calvin Reeder. I mean, that's a guy whose films I loved for years. I loved his films, and I'd written him on Facebook or MySpace or something about, you know, working together. And he was like, yeah, maybe, maybe. And then, like, you know, 10 years later, he wrote me out of the blue and something happened. We made two shorts back to back together. So you just never know how things will come full circle.
I still have freaking nightmares about watching one of Calvin's movies at a midnight screening somewhere.
I have a feeling I know which one it is.
You talked about earlier, you mentioned earlier, you hadn't shot anything since 2019. And I was kind of amazed at that because, man, when you look at what you're about to have kind of come out as far as like all the shorts that are coming out and even like Jeff's film that's coming out, Marzlet's film. Can you talk to me about 2019 shooting wise? Because you shot a lot of material, and I know as an actor's life, you're ahead of your work.
Yeah, I just lost you for 1 second. You just said we shot a lot of material that year.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, I think you were on. Did you shoot A Sweet Life and Smell of Coriander together or separately? And
so there were some films that I shot Sweet Life. Actually, funny enough, in 2017.
Wow.
And that was in Qingdao in China. And that movie, unfortunately, may never see the light of day, sadly, because, and this is kind of a tangential thing on that film, but amazing experience, first time shooting in China, right, on the film. And it had like a huge budget and they had a huge crew and the cast was great. I made a lot of really good friends on that film. But unfortunately, with this car to pass. Unfortunately, it was one of those things where the Chinese government at the time had been shifting where the censorship board shifted from like the basically the Ministry of Culture while we were shooting the film to where by the time we were in post with that film, it was now under the Ministry of Propaganda. And so there was such a lockdown on the types of films that could get seen and get made now versus when we shot it in 17 that unfortunately I think it might have fallen through the cracks and it may never get seen, which is a shame because there's a lot of hard work by really good people that went into that film. And I think it's a beautiful movie. Kind of has some Wes Anderson edges to it a little bit. But yeah, so like that was 2017 was a really kind of big year for me, actually, in terms of like I did a lot of features, I did a lot of shorts. That's when we started shooting the first wave of Freeland.
Mm.
And then we came back and shot more footage for Freeland, actually, in 2018. And then it didn't come out till 2020, you know, at South by Southwest. But then that was aborted due to obviously COVID and everything. So thankfully Freeland's finally coming out on VOD, I believe next week. And that's after it had a nice theatrical run, over the last couple weeks in a couple different cities, which was really cool. But yeah, I would say the end of 2019 definitely felt like a shift. And I think part of it was because like I knew I had a feeling that a move was in the air. Like it felt like kind of a turning point and, you know, getting to be in a couple good features, that year and also to be in some good shorts that year. That's like, you know, we shot Ken that year. We shot a great short by Paul Taylor. He's the guy that made Driftwood. If you ever saw that film that won Slam Dance back in. But so he did a new short that Jocelyn and I acted in both. And then Jeff's Western, which was great, was in a horror film called They Want Me Gone by Drew Britton. So there was a nice little run there for sure. And then, as you said, it's like, it was shocking, you know, because everything came to such a screeching halt. And so I think last year for me, as I know it did for a lot of people, you know, became one about introspection and reevaluating your goals, personally, artistically, you know, trying to figure out who you are and what you're after. And so I did a lot of writing during that time. I had been in the midst of taking meetings with like this feature script of mine. And my manager at the time, who I no longer have, she was really getting me some wonderful, like high profile meets with people who can make this script happen, which was really important because that script I could not make on my own. Like it wouldn't be an indie. It's like a 1970s ensemble film and starts like in the summer and ends in the winter, like in Pittsburgh. So it goes from summer to like snow, you know, and it's a big movie. And so I had a lot of like kind of momentum happening with these meetings and thinking something was going to happen, and everything kind of came to a halt. So I think this year has been kind of about trying to see if there's a way to salvage some things that were stopped, but then also trying to start some new things, you know, start fresh. And one of the things that came out of the break, I say the break, but it's a terrible time for everybody. But one of the things that came out of this time was a new short that I co-directed with my friend Hugo D'Souza. And the short, we just finished like 2 months ago. We started submitting to festivals, but it's me doing a comedy, man, as a director, if you can believe it, which is pretty strange. But the other strange part was I'm also in it, which I normally, as you know, I don't normally like to act in my own stuff. But my friend Hugo wrote it. He wrote the screenplay for us to just have a chance to act together. He's like, you know, it's COVID. We live 10, 15 minutes away from each other here in LA. Like, let's make a movie. And so it really became like a beautiful little escape making that movie. And it was a challenge because it was like an all new team of people who I'd never worked with before. And usually I always have, you know, somebody who's I've worked with before, who we have a shorthand with. It's my first LA shoot, acting and directing. Wasn't my script. Normally I always write the script. So it was a lot of new things, and it allowed, I think, a lot of room for growth and, you know, kind of an evolution in a way. You know, I kind of had to let go of thinking, you know, hey, this is a kind of Frank story I would write, or this is a Frank movie that I wouldn't make. And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. Like, I like Hugo. I like this idea. This is something we're going to do together and listen to your gut. And I'm really glad I did.
Is that the one that's the event?
It's the event, yeah. And, yeah, it's a 10-minute film. And so we just are submitting out. So we're hoping to hear from festivals with some kind of news. So we'll see.
I've got to see this comedy version of Frank because all I've known for you, buddy, is not comedy. So that is...
I know, man. Well, I mean, that's what's funny is, like, you know, on one hand, it's like as an actor, I feel like I get to do some comedy, but as a director, it's, you know, it's certainly not the kind of movies I direct. And so this was kind of a chance to do something different, but I think you'll still see, you know, in the film, there's, you know, traces of the things I like and, you know, things that I like to do aesthetically, like with filmmaking. I think you'll still see it in the film. But I think the catch with it is I co-directed with Hugo. And so the co-directing aspect was really, I think, important because I think we both kind of like filled in each other's gaps, like in a certain way that was really interesting. So yeah, I'll have to send you a link, man. I'll send it to you later today. I'd love to hear what you think about it.
Oh, I can't wait. Speaking of directing, and gosh, when you look at all the fantastic directors you've been able to work with, what are some of the things you've taken from particular people? I mean, we mentioned, you know, like Upstream, Shane's way of doing a film is very different than, let's say, I would imagine, like Keith doing a movie, or, you know, obviously Jeff's a fun guy, and his history of animation must have been fun just to kind of, hey, how do you rotoscope?
Yeah, it's like, exactly.
Are there any things that you've pulled from people, or even maybe, you know, getting to know over the years the way that, you know, you have a close relationship with someone like Cameron and how much passion he put into his film? What are the things that you take, or what are things that have stood out for you as far as, like, I'm going to add that to my repertoire? Because when I think of you as a director, I think your lexicon is much bigger and brighter than people even imagine as far as material. So I'm kind of curious, though, what have you added over the years to, you know, to help you hone your skills, and hopefully when you do this feature, you can, you know, apply them.
Well, I think that's a great question, man. I mean, I think we're always, you know, consciously or not, you know, absorbing things that we're seeing when we're on other people's sets. And I think being an actor and a director, you know, you're always taking things that, you know, you'd be like, hey, when I direct an actor, I want to say what that director said to me. Or, you know, when I'm directing, I'll see something happen on a set where I'm like, hey, like, how do you remember that when I'm on the other side sometime? But I think you're right. I think everybody has different things that they bring, and everybody's styles are so different. And I think more than anything, I think the key thing I've just taken from a lot of different people is, and it's not even something new, it's just a reminder, but it's like, you know, at the end of the day, like, these are movies, you know, it's not real life. And I think it's easy, the younger you are, to get caught up in a film or a work and to think that that's the end all, to have all your focus be on this one thing. And I think sometimes you can lose, you know, I've been on sets where, like, a lot of times people lose sight of the people involved. And I think after a year like COVID, I think it's extremely important for people to realize, like, safety is paramount. And we've just had, you know, this terrible news about the set Rust and what happened on that. And I think, again, like, those are issues that have happened time and time and time again, and they shouldn't be happening. So I think it's a reminder that, you know, you can have all your aesthetics in place, you know, you can know your script, you can have a great team, you can have fun, but it's like, at the end of the day, it's like, what are the safety precautions involved in making a film? You know, 'cause people's lives are the most important. But on an aesthetic level, like, things I've taken away are just like, you know, working with Keith is interesting because it's kind of tied into working with Kate McLean and Mario Ferloni on Freeland, because they're documentary filmmakers who finally started dabbling in narrative, and Freeland's their, you know, their debut feature, but it's a narrative. And so getting to work with documentary filmmakers like them or like Keith, it's interesting how they have a very observational approach. And, you know, what one thing I kind of took away was when to give somebody direction, and a kind of direction that is direct as well. Because I think it's very easy for me to want to say, hey, I need you to do this and do that. Like, this is what I need to do, and be very specific, which I think I usually am. But I think there's something to be said for sometimes just, instead of telling them exactly what you want or what you don't want, raise a question and allow that person to answer it by their next take, you know. And I think there's then a sense of discovery, not only for you, but also for them. And I think it might get you closer to what you're intending or what you're looking for, but at the end of the day, it's giving the actor a chance to discover something new by a question, because then they don't think that they have to fulfill the need or want to the director and give, like, you know, what's the best answer, but I'm going to give you an answer. And oftentimes that's the most truthful answer. It's not always the best answer, but it's the one that's the most truthful that comes out of a reply to a question, you know?
It's fascinating. So I'm going to jump to stealing something from your social media that you posted a day ago, because it, what you said hit me really hard, because it happened to be one of the shows that I grew up on, I think just like you did. Losing Dean Stockwell completely threw my mind for a loop, and you talk yeah. about it. Like, for our generation, you know, our age group, I think Quantum Leap was something fantastical. And
yeah, absolutely.
I'm kind of curious. There have been, sadly, because of COVID, I think is a huge, you know, backbone of this. We've lost a lot of great talent over these last few years. When you look at people in this profession, especially those that you've looked up to, or you know, and seeing some of these greats pass on, like Dean, how do you view them now that you've been able to dive into the world that they were in? Like, I feel like you maybe hold a different kinship or view of Dean compared to me as a viewer. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'm kind of curious, has yeah. seeing some of these veteran actors and actresses and filmmakers that we've lost, like, do you view it differently than if it was young Frank, you know, just looking at someone who was in one of his favorite shows, Quantum Leap? Like, you might look at Dean a little different, because I know you didn't know him, but there is a kinship there.
I that's a great thing to bring up, man. I think you're right. I think as a fellow actor, and I think one who now is you know, has been doing this since he was a kid, and then seeing a life of a guy that, I mean, we're lucky to have had him as long as we've had. You know, I think there's the story even that David Lynch was shocked when he saw Dean Stockwell walk in and ask to be a part of Dune, mm-hmm. because he thought that Dean had been dead for years. So Lynch was just in shock, like he was seeing a ghost. He's like, I didn't know this guy was still alive. And the funny part is that Dean Stockwell said in an interview that, like, he thinks people still think that, you know, every time he pops up in these kind of decade increments, people are like, God, that guy's still around. Like, he's really kind of this interesting connecting point to old Hollywood, and then kind of like resurgence, like in the 1970s, of like scrappy indie films and being in, you know, working with those directors. And then he continued on past that, you know, into TV in the 90s. And, you know, and then now, I mean, look, it's like 2021, and he's still been going at it. You know, he's still been in things. So I think as a fellow actor, and then seeing these greats kind of pass away, I think the feeling is like, wow, like, it makes you appreciative of the career that they have had, and it's inspiring, like, to keep on and realizing that, you know, your career, if you want it to be a career, you know, it can take on an evolution, and it can change forms. And don't be afraid to let it change forms, you know? I mean, his career is an interesting one in the fact that he's really, I think he's kind of a chameleon. I wouldn't say he's a chameleon in the Gary Oldman, Peter Sellers, Meryl Streep way, but I think he's always kind of an edge of, like, I feel Dean in every part, and yet the parts he plays are all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And he sells every single part. And it's inspiring to me in the way that, you know, people talk about, like, the Beatles, you know, them going from poppy songs of the 60s to, like, the experimental shit they did in the 70s, you know. So I think that's a really important thing, is to, like, it's a great example of, like, you know, listen to yourself. Let yourself breathe. If you don't want to act for a while, don't act for a while. You know, there's this Shelley O'Malley, this really amazing film critic who I admire. She's a really wonderful person as well. She writes for Roger Ebert. And she just did this beautiful tribute piece on Dean Stockwell, because she was a huge fan. And I believe she'd met him talked to him a few times. But something she brought up in that piece that really resonated with me about Dean in particular was the fact that he quit acting several times. And then every time he came back to it, he was a different person. Mm. And he had aged, you know. And I think that's something interesting, because then he's taking those experiences he had when he wasn't acting, and he's applying that to new roles that he's taking on. And those performances wouldn't have been the same, you know, if he hadn't listened to his gut and had that time away, you know. And as kind of a tangent, I would also add that I think that note about going away from acting, something for for filmmakers and actors to think about is like finding inspiration in things that aren't film, that isn't acting, but find, you know, seeing a painting, you know, listening to a piece of music, and then that inspires you to do a part, you know, or, you know, going on a trip to the mountains inspires you to make a film, not seeing a movie. So I've been getting older, I've also been trying to open myself up to living and just having experiences outside of film, whether it's with music or reading or, you know, nature, and all those things will still inform my acting and filmmaking, but at least the inspiration is fresh and coming from a new place.
Oh, that's such a beautiful sentiment.
Thanks.
You're going to hate me, though, because my next question dives back into the love of film.
Yo, hey, I love movies. Don't get me wrong. You know, I'm a cinephile, man. But I just got to say, like, the older I've gotten, I've just been trying not to always be so wrapped up in it and try to always remember, hey, you can just go outside and, you know, listen to the birds a little bit, Frank, you know.
So I want to say maybe 3 years ago, I got the guy I work with for C-League Film News, Dev, the guy who created Dev Shapiro.
Yeah.
He got me a really lovely birthday gift that when I first opened it up, I immediately thought of you because I know it was something that I think you would have adored to get. But he got me a huge set, like a Criterion set of Cassavetes.
Oh yeah, that's a great box set.
Oh, it's lovely, the big red one. Yeah,
there and faces.
Oh, so good. And I'm curious, since you are, I know you're a Cassavetes fan, but you're also a cinephile of that era. And it sounds like with your script that you're diving into that '70s world vibe a little bit. What do you feel about how that? Weirdly enough, that era of film, whether it's, you know, the more mainstream Scorsese or even, you know, the less mainstream, someone like Abel Ferreira and his wild-ass movies. Why was that era so interesting? I'd love to know from someone who's a lover of that time, but also, you know, someone who's been able to see how there's still very much something to that weird, amazing time frame of changing of the guard of filmmaking.
I think that's a great question, man. I would say that my gut is that when those movies came out in the 70s, they came out at a time where those films were so raw and so scrappy and more explicit in a way. Some would say more vulnerable or more honest. And I think when they came out, I think, you know, it was coming out of the Hollywood system. There was that really weird, crazy moment where the films being made in Hollywood were these films. Like, I mean, you had, like, you know, Bonnie and Clyde. And, you know, it was like, it's like half an old Hollywood movie at the time, but then it's also, like, so brutally and explicitly violent. And there's this freshness and this kind of, you know, French New Wave-inspired editing style. And so there's a lot of things going on with that movie. So I think something about that time is interesting because it's really right on the line of, like, there were the movies that were before this time, and now we're, like, ushering in a whole new wave of style of films that are, you know, because even if you think about it, with, like, Brando and Montgomery Clift and all those people that were, like, really talented and really good people, but they were kind of part of that old wave of actors, and then their style and the method was so raw, you know, that people hadn't seen anything like it. And so it was kind of like their performances stood out in these films that maybe weren't as brazen as a film, but their performances were. And then by the time the 70s rolled around, you had all those actors like the Pacinos and Dustin Hoffman and Meryl Streep and, you know, all these people who came in and were not only giving these raw, fresh performances, but in films that aesthetically were also very raw and very fresh. So I feel like it's that perfect towing the line of like, we're still looking back at the old, but we have the new coming in as well, you know?
I love it, man. I know that was a little bit off kilter, you know, your work and stuff,
no,
but I was
not
like,
at all, man.
I was like, yeah. I've been thinking about it ever since I got that set. I was like, man, if I don't ask Frank about the 70s, I'm going to be angry at myself.
No, I'm glad you did, man. I mean, it really is such a special time. I mean, it's kind of magical, and I think it's really just because it almost feels like they still had the support of studios, but the films they were making were not, you know, studio films as we knew them then, you know. They felt so daring, you know, and then as the years went on and decades went on, I just got to add that it's like, you know, then the studios weren't making as daring films. In my heart, I don't think they were, but then those daring films became indie films and they didn't have the support of the studios and they were on their own, you know? So.
Well, Frank, it's been a pleasure. I'll end it with something. I'll end it with something kind of quick. I'm not going to ask what most recently you've seen. I know deep down you're like me. You were a lit grad, you know, English. So what's the last thing you read?
That's a great question, man. So I read this great Don DeLillo that I had kept pushing aside for years that I really love called Point Omega.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a slender one. It's like it's a novella. I read it like in an afternoon, you know, so it's not too long. It's easily digestible. But if you're a DeLillo fan, I'm constantly marveling like how that guy can create such a beautifully dense work that's so thin and so few in pages, as well as he can write these massive epics at the same time. I think it's a real talent. And then I'm currently reading My Heart is a Chainsaw, which is a really great kind of ode to the slasher film, but it's a novel. Great piece of fiction. I was wanting to read it before Halloween, so I was a little late to the game, but finally getting to it, and it's really, really good. Movie-wise, though, I am going to throw in there that I saw Mass.
Ooh. Oh, those four performances. Oh, my.
Yeah. Yeah. Really incredible. I was at a talk back with Ann Dowd, and it was just really, really amazing. It was just really a beautiful talk back, and like getting to kind of hear like how it was put together. And then I just saw over the last week or so, I saw both Titania, and then I saw Lamb, which I adored. Thought Lamb was really great. I mean, it's like it's a hell of a fable, hell of a fairy tale that's feels really fresh. So I really enjoyed that.
What a wide variety films.
I'll see almost anything, you know, but then the question is like, you know, what are the ones that are going to stick with you, you know? But yeah, I loved them. I thought those were really, really great films.
You know, I loved Titan Raw was so amazing.
Yes, you know, what's funny you say that is I have not seen Raw. So Raw is on my list to see. I read about Raw when it came out, and I never got around to seeing it. So that's on our list to watch at home, especially after loving Titania. So
it's
really excited.
I think you'll love it. And I'm so glad you brought up Mass. I feel like it's almost like an acting school. I mean, the things they're doing, just the four of them sitting there, was incredible. I mean, I think Jason Isaacs, when he breaks down about halfway through, when there's a silent moment, I was, man. And Ann Dowd, whoo, when she comes back to give them the plant, I broke down. It was amazing.
Yeah, really, really powerful. I got a, and then my special shout out to that cast is actually I thought it was so beautiful and smart to have kind of a prologue epilogue with those people that run the church. And like the kind of like, you know, pompous circumstances, like how many chairs and where are the snacks? Like what kind of snacks do we get? Do they even want snacks? Like, you know, we added some levity to the movie, but it also like added some tension, right? Because we were like, man, like what's coming? Like we know they're going to come into this room. I thought that was really smart on the script part, like to have that kind of prologue to set everything up.
You know, in that, I forget the song's a pretty famous song at the very end, but that's sung by a Dallas music group for a church.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's really cool.
Yeah, there's a couple of interesting ties to Texas with that film. The filmmaker Franz, another actor-director, by the way, who's been in a lot, and yeah, he told me some really interesting things. That movie was lovely, yeah.
I love that it's like from the guy who starred in Cabin of the Woods. Comes, you know, a drama. I love that. I love that disparity there. Like, how people are like, what? I'm like, yeah, like, you should really get to know this guy and his work, you know? It's great.
Well, Frank, I appreciate the time, buddy. I feel like you've walked a mile while we've been talking.
Hey, you know what's good? I've been trying to walk about an hour every day if I can, so I gotta. This is a good excuse, and just great to talk to you, man. It's been forever, so.